Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, June 8th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Let's get going right to the market reports today. And a little pressure on the dollar, but let's start out with gold. It took until the last few hours of trade for it to get moving. We have moved a whole dollar, 170 at 1175. Silver was higher, but corrected downward, 0.13 at 1610. Platinum was up 6 at 1106, and palladium was down 8 at 747. And as I mentioned, the index, dollar index, down 1.14 at 95.21. And we'll talk about this in just a few seconds as, you know, they're blaming the big drop in the dollar because Mr. Obama's, over there talking at the G7 meeting and saying that how bad the U.S. dollar is hurting things, that the stronger dollar is certainly hurting things. But we'll talk about that right after the market report. And, of course, now the dollar, the U.S. index is down 1.14. Crude oil down 84 at 58.29. And the paper markets today, off their lows of the day. We have the Dow, I guess it's about at the lows, about 88 to the downside, 17,766. The NASDAQ down 46 at 5,021. The S&P down 13 at 2,079. The 10-year yield, 2.38%, down 0.02. The euro was up big today, 1.54, again at 1.13 for the euro. European markets all down. Germany was down about 1.5%, down 130 points. Asian markets seem relatively quiet. Of course, I'm not seeing the Shanghai at this point, but the Japan and Hong Kong were basically quiet overnight. So that's pretty. You can laugh at this, Al, but the fear and greed index. What emotion? And it's just 36 for the fear side. So.
Does that 36. Mean I should be very afraid?
You better get very afraid if you're holding paper. Mm. But, everybody knows that a correction is coming. And I think if people are holding their dollars in the paper markets, it just, it just defies logic. I just don't get it. And get that paper protected, folks. Get it into physical gold and silver, and take delivery of it if you can. If you're holding an IRA, precious metals IRA, it's not as good as taking physical delivery, but it is better than holding paper. So those are options to you if you don't want to pull it out and pay the penalties or the taxes on it. You can roll those IRAs into a precious metals to where the product is held. I only use the Delaware Depository. I know there's folks out there who talk about where you can take physical delivery of your precious metals with an IRA and pay. If you want to battle the IRS in the future, be my guest. But, I got other things to do. So, but those are your options. Give us a call. I'd be more than happy to help you out. And
it's your recommendation that let's get physical. You remember that song, Wilde?
Yes, I do remember it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We'll have to get Frank to find that.
Well, it's always – no, he doesn't have to. I mean, it's always best to take physical delivery of your product. I mean, that is your number one that is the way that you should go. I mean, that is takes away most of the risk or all of the risk, you know.
There's
risks in everything, but that
no
is
way,
the best.
This is called life. It is risky business.
Breathing is risky.
Yeah, no, but breathing in places and the rest of that sort of thing. I know I fall out of bed once in a while. I mean, even that is risky. So there's nothing, but you can minimize your risks. You can look at it. You can make intelligent choices. You can't, absolutely escape all risk, but you can make intelligent choices and you can minimize your risk. And when you look at what's likely to happen to paper debt instruments in the near future, it just makes sense to get out of something that's paper and get into something that's not paper, which is to say something physical. It's just sensible, logical, rational, reasonable, prudent.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the White House denied that Obama said a strong dollar was a problem. This was reported by Reuters and a lot of other news sources that I have seen, but Reuters, they said that the U.S. official denied on Monday the Newswire report that President Barack Obama had told the group of seven industrial nations that a strong dollar was a problem. And the president did not state that. And what do you think, Al?
Well, when he says, when the president says the dollar, strong dollar is a problem, next question is, a problem for who or whom? All right? Strong dollar is a problem for the United States. Exports, that's fact. Mm-hmm. But it's a blessing for Europe.
Yes.
I'll make you bet I don't know who all is in the G7 industrial nations, but I wonder how different the basket of currencies is for the U.S. dollar index from membership in the G7 nations. There are seven nations that are involved in the U.S. dollar index. You got six on one side, which include Japan and the European Union and Great Britain and I think Canada, and I don't recall who. Switzerland is in there and maybe one other one. But we've got six of those, plus one in the United States, seven there, seven in the G7 nations. I don't know that they're identical. Go ahead.
Well, let me tell you who's in there. It's Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the UK, and the US. That's your G7.
That's the G7.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, in any case, what I'm just trying to say is what is a problem for the United States is something of a blessing for the European Union, for example, and Japan. As our dollar gets stronger, we are less able to compete on international markets. And as our dollar gets stronger on the U.S. dollar index, it follows that the other six currencies are, on average, growing weaker. They get the benefit of inflation. We get the disability of deflation. And Obama says that's a problem. Well, I guarantee you that the people in the other six members of the G7 nations, they say, well, that's your problem. That's not our problem. They don't care. So part of the first order of business is who has a problem with a strong dollar? And that is the United States. has a problem with a strong dollar, but the rest of these countries are not going to be particularly inclined to be sympathetic or do anything to help us. There's point one. But the official from the White House, although Obama was accused of saying that the strong dollar was a problem, the official at the White House, he absolutely denies that Obama made such a statement. According to that official, President Obama made a point that he'd made previously for a number of times, that global demand is too weak and the G7 nations need to use all policy instruments, including fiscal policy as well as structural reforms and monetary policy to promote growth. Well, that's just standard old, you know, rah, 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 hooray for our side or whatever. It's cheerleading. It doesn't amount to anything. But let's accept the idea that Obama did not say that a strong dollar was a problem. Okay, he didn't say it. He said he denies it. And I said no such thing. Okay. All right, let's accept that. Did President Obama say that the strong dollar was not a problem? You see what I'm saying here? On the one hand, he says, I didn't say it was a problem. That's not me. Okay, Obama doesn't say a strong dollar is a problem. Did he ever say that a strong dollar is not a problem? Let's let Mr. Obama tell us all one time, face-to-face on TV, all right, my fellow Americans or something like that, whether a strong dollar is or is not a problem. Let's put him on television and let's find out, is it or is it not? But let's assume, just for fun, that the White House official is lying or mistaken. Let's assume that President Obama has declared that the strong dollar is a problem. He really said it. All right, and it is. You know, it's bad for debt that's denominated, for debtors who have loans that are denominated in dollars. It's bad for exports, U.S. exports. It's a problem, at least from some perspectives. If President Obama really said the strong dollar is a problem, then we can reasonably assume that Obama is seriously looking for ways to inflate the dollar and weaken and devalue it. Now, whether he can succeed in doing that remains to be seen. They've been trying to cause inflation in this country ever since the start of the onset of the Great Recession, and they haven't had much success. Not the sort that they were hoping for, that's for sure. They've had some, but not much. Still, the implication is that President Obama will take strong measures, if such strong measures still exist, to weaken, devalue, and inflate the dollar within, say, the next 6 months. I mean, if he thinks it's a problem, he's going to have to deal with it. If he said it's a problem, and he almost certainly did, might have been a slip of the tongue, but who knows, but just the same, you know, it's obvious. You look at it, yeah, it's a problem. And if they are going to do, now we watch and see, what can they do to end deflation or slow deflation and make the dollar less valuable? And it's interesting to me that just today it dropped by over a point on the U.S. dollar index. I mean, is that all it takes? Obama just says a strong dollar is a problem and sure enough the dollar gets weaker. We go into one full point on the U.S. dollar index of downward, meaning inflation. If he says it again tomorrow, do we get another point down, Melody?
Maybe. Well, it was originally reported by a French reporter. And, you know, you'd have to know that there's a little more text, you know, to, you know, his statement about the dollar. And, yeah, he was probably over there whining to his cohorts, you know, hey, you guys had weak currencies now for a while. It's our turn.
Yeah,
you know, let's switch it back to let us have the low currency for a while, you know.
And it's ridiculous on top of everything else, because here they are trying to prove each of them is hoping that their currency will be shown to be worth less than the others.
I know it.
I mean, this is just so bizarre. You know, it's like saying, it's
nobody.
Like little kids standing around saying, my dad can't beat up your dad. Oh, no, my dad can't beat up your dad. And the other kid, my dad can't beat up any of your dads. The other kid, no, my dad can't beat up anybody. That's not the way the world works. It's not the way little boys are made. That's not the way adults act. And here they are trying to. It's part, in my opinion, this is just another one of those illustrations of the kind of insanity that flows from having a fiat currency in the first place. We're dealing with this phony baloney money system. And once you establish it, it leads you in directions that you would not want to go. But the logic of the fiat currency, once you accept it, it pushes you into positions where you wind up saying, well, we've got to do something completely stupid now, but we'll sell it to the public and they'll believe it. Well, we'll see. But I don't think it's, you know, how much longer. You know, I have thought this for years. It's like listening to a siren, you know, that's just going, and the sound of the siren is increasing and the pitch is rising, and you keep thinking it can't shriek much louder than it already is. But I've thought that for a couple of years, and it continues to just wind up, and the pitch rises and the volume increases. And I don't know, can't tell you how soon it's going to happen, but the siren, you know, most of you who are listening to the program, you get that. You get a sense that that siren is blowing, and, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to protect yourself as best you can. Because all of us are in jeopardy on this. You know, you can hear all sorts of conspiracy theories and doom and gloom reports and the rest of that sort of thing. The worst case scenario, I've said it a couple dozen times in this, the worst case is always the least likely. All right? We are least likely that the whole country is going to collapse into utter chaos. But it's not unreasonable to think that we're going to do something, even if we don't collapse into utter chaos. It's not unreasonable to suppose that we're going to see something that's more painful and oppressive than the Great Depression.
Well, you know, Al, I talked to some friends, and, you know, senior citizens, those that are living on their retirements and so forth, they have this money, it's in the markets. It's the only place they're getting any return on these dividends that are being paid by these corporations. I mean, certainly, you know, triple than what any bank is paying and so forth. They understand it's a risk. They understand that there's a problem with the stock market, and they don't think it's going to, they're afraid of it falling. They think there's going to be a huge correction. But they don't know what else to do. They're scared to pull it out. They're scared to leave it there. They feel they have no options. And so I think a lot of folks that have any money are in this position. And it's difficult to go against the grain, to go against the herd, and protect that paper with gold. Because they're told by their financial planners that seemingly know how these markets work and everything that they don't have much to be concerned about. But yet they hear and they follow. Everything else tells them something different. So, you know, they're in a position. They need to make some very difficult decisions. And you're right. There's a lot of conspiracy theories. There's a lot of misinformation, misguided information, promises. And, yeah, all of those, a lot of that is to gear folks into buying whatever, you know, product is being promoted at that point in time. And folks just need to take a realistic approach to things and the safe way. And what you mentioned earlier in the beginning, Al, eliminate or reduce, maybe you can't eliminate, but you need to reduce your risk.
Yeah, and the one thing about it is this, you can't wait until everything blows up and then say, now I'm going to go reduce my risk. Too late. If you're going to try to reduce your risk, and that's the real challenge, anyone who's listening to this program understands that there is at least an increasing probability that we're going to see a serious problem in the near future. Could happen this year or next year. I don't know when it's going to happen. Nobody knows. But it certainly doesn't seem like it's going to be 5 years from now. Not likely to be 3 years from now. Could be 3 months from now. Nobody really knows. The thing thing about it is you can't wait until it happens to act. You've got to preempt. And that's, it's the folks who understand, or at least believe, you look around, you think, okay, we're coming on a difficult time. What is incumbent on you? And the answer is you have to act to try to protect yourself if you believe we're coming on difficult times. All right? You have to act now. You have to act before we really get into those difficult times. And that's what these people you're describing, Melody, are failing to do. It's not for lack of knowledge.
Nope.
All right? They understand what's likely to happen here. I mean, as well as any of us can. It's kind of obscure, and you know, it's we don't have clear understanding. We've not given you prophecy on this, but we can see probable trouble headed our way. But it's for lack of courage to make a choice, make a decision, act. And if they fail to do that, then they're going to get caught with the herd and they're going to pay a serious price. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
This isn't a news story, Al. It's an old story, but we're going to talk about it anyway, briefly as it might be. But you have state budgets that are coming due here pretty soon. 45 states begin the next fiscal year on July 1st, and they must have their operating plans in place by then. And, of course, there's a lot of disagreements over closing deficits or expanding the Medicaid. They're forcing several legislatures to extend their sessions. Woe is me. But there's a lot of odds over budget problems that these states are having, that they're dealing with this red ink since the Great Recession, so to speak. And we have the 45 states, and there was a recent survey by the Associated Press. State House reporters found at least 22 states were projecting budget shortfalls for the coming fiscal year. Stagnant or declining tax revenue combined with rising pension and health care costs, of course, are among the chief reasons for this continuing budget turmoil. We talked last week about Alaska. Looking to lay off quite a few people. Illinois,
10,000. 10,000. And the total population is only 750,000 for the state. So that's interesting. They probably only got 400,000 or 500,000 people working in that state, and the government's going to lay off 10,000 out of maybe 400,000. So you're talking about, you know, one out of 40?
Huh. You have Illinois is facing the largest budget gap of any state. You have Washington. Their projected shortfall of more than $2 billion. So you got a lot of these states that have a lot of difficulties. They say most of them will probably pass their budgets, but you have I don't know what state he's from, but he talks about these budgets are fake budgets, phony budgets, unbalanced budgets that will be released. And again, it's just more phony. And yet,
but this has been going on for years. If you listen to Warren Burian and his research into the comprehensive annual financial reports, which he broke that story, that information back in the early 1990s. It's 20 years he's been talking about this. And what it is, for those who don't know, the government comes out, the state, local, federal, they come out and they say, oh, here's the budget. And we've got X number of dollars coming in, and we've got to spend this many, and gee, we're going to be short, and therefore we got to raise taxes. Well, the budget is all we ever hear about, but the budget is a projection. The budget is we anticipate we'll probably have this much money coming in, and we anticipate that we'll probably have this much expenses. And based on the projection, they draw conclusions on whether they have to raise or lower taxes. Well, they've been routinely raising taxes, and this has been going on since, I'll go back 30, 40 years, maybe longer than that. I'm not sure when the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report started, but the CAFRs, Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, are mandated by the federal government for all the states, cities, municipalities, water districts, the rest of this sort of thing. These are the reports that are issued after the year is over. All right, the budget is the budget for 2016 is what they're working on right now. That's before 2016. It's just a projection. The comprehensive annual report will come out in 2017 after the year 2016 is over, and they will tell you how much money they really spent. And what Walter Burian was able to put together is how much fraud is incorporated in the budgets. There is money moving around in masses that piles boxcars full of it that the public doesn't understand or appreciate because all they do is pay attention to the budget. Budget's not the deal. A budget is fictional. It's prophecy. It's these people sitting around and say, oh, I'm going to look into my crystal ball and this is what's going to happen next year. They don't know what's going to happen next year. If you want to find out what's happening in the government, get hold of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. My only point in belaboring this point is just trying to make people understand that the manipulation of the numbers is not a new thing. This has been going on for several generations. I don't know when it... I mean, I would never be surprised if someone said that somebody in government was manipulating the numbers and you know, deceiving the public. I wouldn't be surprised if they were doing it 5 years ago and 10 years ago and 150 years ago. I wouldn't be surprised. But they have brought it to a real art form today. And it is not just something that's unusual or something that's concealed. We all know. They're cooking the books, and nobody seems to mind. Yeah, they're cooking the books, so what? Let's invest in them anyway. You know? The whole thing is a kind of madness. And you've got to get yourself... I mean, you look at this, ladies and gentlemen, and you've got to make decisions whether you want to run with the herd or you want to act on your own and do what you think is right, as best you're able to understand, to protect yourself. The whole thing is becoming not just unstable, but crazy. I mean, the lies, the fabricated numbers. How long can it continue? How long is it possible? We've got an article here. Let me see if I can find it right now on tax rates. Here's one. This is from the Associated Press. Experts worry that phony numbers are misleading investors. This just cracks me up. We've been talking about this for 5 years.
Longer.
And here's, me at least. And here's the AP is reporting that experts worry that phony numbers are misleading investors. The record profits that companies are reporting may not be all they're cracked up to be. As the stock market climbs ever higher, professional investors are warning that companies are presenting misleading versions of the results that ignore a wide variety of normal costs of running a business and make it seem like they're doing better than they really are. What's worse, the financial analysts who are supposed to fight corporate spin are often playing along. Instead of challenging the companies, they're largely passing along the rosy numbers in reports recommending stocks to investors. In an analysis of 500 major companies, some sponsored by the Associated Press, based on data provided by, they give a list, you don't need to know that right now, they found that the gap between the adjusted profits that analysts cite and bottom line earnings figures that companies are legally obliged to report, or net income, has widened dramatically over the past 5 years. What they're saying is that a substantial number, a majority, virtually all of the 500 major companies that they analyzed, they looked at their books, they are creating evidence, they're making reports to say they're making much more profit than is in fact true. Now, when you get this report from the Associated Press that deals with 500 major companies, they are not identified in this article, but it says 500 major companies, all right? And in fact, the report indicates that something like 97% are cooking the books. Now, what they're doing is legal, but they are presenting, they're saying, oh, we're making $50 million profit, when in fact, maybe they're only making $40 million profit. Huh? They're much less than what they report. And when you see this apply to 500 major firms, you've got to at least suspect that the entire stock markets, they're so overwhelmed, they're running on lies. Everybody's fibbing. Everybody's, you know, I mean, an incredible game of liar's poker. It's just bizarre. Where do we go? Here's the key findings. It says 72% of the 500 companies reviewed by the Associated Press had adjusted profits. That's where they make things up and they don't report all of their costs. They had adjusted profits that were higher than the net income in the first quarter of this year. Net income is a real deal. That's about the same as comparable period 5 years earlier, but the gap between the adjusted and net income figures has widened considerably. Adjusted earnings were typically 16% higher than net income in the most recent period versus 9% 5 years ago. All right. What they're saying is 72% of the 500 companies they analyzed are reporting their profits on average 16% higher than is in fact the truth. And then they go on, they say for a smaller group of companies reviewed, 21% of the total. Adjusted profits soared 50% or more above net income. What? They're not just lying to the tune of 16%, they're lying to the tune of 50% or even more. That's 21% of them. Right? And quarter after quarter, what else have they got down here? 15 companies, here's the last ones they report, 3% of the 500, 15 companies with adjusted profits. They say, oh yeah, we're making money. They actually had bottom line losses over the 5 years. Investors, and they go on and they say, investors have poured money into their stocks just the same. And this is where this becomes comical, hilarious, tragic. People are investing in corporations because they read a report that they're making profits, and in fact, they're not. They're investing in other corporations where they say they're making profits, but they're not making anywhere near as much as they're not making what they claim. I'm only guessing on this, but according to reports, again, 72% the corporations analyzed artificially increased their profits by 16% or more. Another 21% adjusted profits by 50% or more. 3% of the corporations adjusted profits when there actually were losses. And that leaves 4% of the corporations. 4% of 500 corporations who were apparently making an accurate report of their profits. You get that? 4%. If it were discovered that 96% of the companies selling stocks on Wall Street had inflated their reported profits by, say, an average of 25%, it's 20-25%, would be my guess. What would happen to the Dow Jones average if that report gets out and people pay attention to it? The Dow's at 18,000. What's going to happen if it finds out that 96-97% of the corporations are making 20% less profit than they report? What's going to happen to the price to earnings ratio? What's going to happen to the price of the stocks? And this is a report from the Dow Jones. Like I say, what if it were discovered that 96% of the company selling stocks, they'd inflated their profits by 20-25%? What happened to Dow Jones? Would it continue at 18,000 or might it collapse to 15,000, even 10,000? And that's where we are right now. I mean, this is an extraordinary article. Who did I say? Who did this? Who produced this article? Mark? No. That's the one over. Hang on just a second. Yeah, the Associated Press. Just came out today. The headline is, Experts Worry That Phony Numbers Are Misleading Investors.
Uh-huh.
You could Google it, folks. You could find the article on your own. I mean, this is devastating information. This is a kind of massive institutionalized fraud. And the article explains, well, it's technically legal. The government allows them to fudge on their numbers one way or another and not include certain items that as costs, all right, in order to kind of pad their apparent profits. It's legal, but it's still fraudulent. If that makes any sense. And how is it going to work out? I mean, what's going to happen to the market when people find out that the profits of the corporations are probably, on average, something like 20% lower than what they report? It's got to cause some sort of a drop in the market. I don't know where it's going to go. It might fall 500 points. It might fall 5,000. I don't know what's going to happen. But you look at this report, it's just astonishing to me, Melody. cooking the books. You know, we should have how to cook a turkey, how to cook a corporation's books. I'm not sure.
I mean, it's not, to me, it's not astonishing because, I mean, we know these corporations for a long time have been rigging their numbers. I mean, they'll say anything so they can, quote unquote, beat the street. And in this digital world that we live in today, do profits even matter? I mean, people have sort of made a disconnect from profits to loss anymore because, you know, the world functions great on losses, I mean, on debt. And I mean, it surprises me. You would think that an article like this by the AP would make people question, demand that things change to get the truth. And it just doesn't seem to matter.
No, that's the thing that's astonishing. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
And yet we have people like you were describing earlier in the program who are elderly, retired, and they're afraid to make a move.
Yeah.
On the one hand, we've got a certain amount of fear. On the other hand, we have a certain amount of apathy. Nobody wants to do anything. Yeah, I can see the freight train coming, but I think I'll catch a few winks here. And I think I'll wake up just before the freight train arrives. I'll wake up from sleeping here on the tracks, you know, and I'll get off the tracks.
There was a comment last week from someone, I can't recall the name, and he says what's driven the fear in these past 7 years has been fear. And it's like, well, usually when you think of fear, it makes markets go down. But actually, describing the people...
You're saying what drove the markets higher.
Higher.
Saying the fear was actually driving the markets higher.
Because
explain
fear,
it.
Well, we're going to break here, so we're a minute break, so we can
explain it when we come
back.
All right, take a break. More commercials. Al and Melody will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 or international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. We're back. It's Melody and Al on Financial Survival.
You and me.
Uh-huh.
Me and you. Anyway, we were talking about fear.
You can't sing much better than I can, you know that?
Well, I wasn't planning to. I didn't practice my scale today.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the fear was keeping people in the market, and the people have a fear of losing, and so they keep it in there. There's no other options open to them, so they keep
That's
their money.
That's because the interest rates is being paid by banks,
exactly.
which they might regard as a safe investment. Those interest rates are so low, they've got to go into something that's riskier. Their fear.
Is keeping them in the market.
Now, that's an interesting argument. All right, and I haven't heard that one before. But
I found it interesting because it's, like I said, usually when you talk about fear in the markets, in the markets are going down, not up. So, yeah. So now that
it's like a Roadrunner cartoon or something like that, you know, it's like Wile E. Coyote. He's run off the cliff and he's keep running higher because he doesn't dare look down, and then he'll fall. So he keeps running higher through the air and the rest of that sort of thing. It's funny in the cartoons. When you see it in the stock market, you say, you know, that actually isn't all that funny. What else?
And I just want to make one more statement before we're going to talk about, you know, being bailed out. Now what happens? But you know, people look for 100% guarantee with their money, and there really isn't 100% guarantee anyway. And even if you go into gold and silver, if you preserve your wealth, you purchase gold and silver, and it fluctuates, the long term, you don't buy gold today and expect it to go up tomorrow. You don't track it like you do your normal investments. It's something that you purchase, and it's a long term investment. That's how it protects your purchasing power over a long period of time. Now, I think the long period of time is certainly closing. I mean, we certainly expect a lot of things to begin happening this year. But again, you can't look for that 100% guarantee. No. Every one of us will be affected somehow, some way. And that's the key to being prepared. So
there's some things that you can't exactly prepare for.
Sure, you do.
You know, what I mean,
as
you get older and you can't do the things you did when you were a young man, young woman. All right, there was a time when I was far more agile than I am today. And I don't just mean in a physical way. I don't just mean the physical sense. I mean that I was, you know, I could handle, it seemed to me at least that I could handle, I don't care. Give me a depression, it doesn't matter, I can handle it. You know, recession, depression, it's all,
sure.
I don't care. You have that confidence. You get older, and you don't necessarily have confidence in your own youthful agility. Your ability to just, you know, roll with the punches and get up and laugh and joke and move on to the, you know, move on to the next battle or the next, you know, where's dinner? We'll find something. Those, you know, maybe the, how about that cat over there? You know, that cat is starting to look kind of tasty. But we'll find something. You get older and you can't rely on that to the same degree you did when you were a young man, young woman.
No, because whatever you lose as you're as you age, as you're older, you lose. You don't have the time to get it back. I mean, when you're 30 and you lose everything, hey, you got the rest of your life to gain it back and double it and triple it. But when you're 70 and 75 and 80, whatever you lose, it's highly unlikely.
Don't say anything about 70.
That's why I moved on, Al. That's why I went a little higher.
Just don't say anything about 70.
But you can't, once it's lost, you can't get it back. So.
Well, that's the thing. You can't have confidence that you'll get another job. I mean, your savings really have
to be. It's not even a matter of confidence. You won't.
Well,
you know, but
when you're younger, you know, I'll get another job. I'll go out tomorrow. I'll find something.
When you're younger, yes, but when you're 80, no. And when you're 80, you can live another 20 years. So if you lose half your savings, you know, it makes life certainly much more difficult.
Who calls this living, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, let's talk about bailouts.
Yep, an article from the Washington Post, and the headline: "We bailed you out, and now you want what?" Americans were angry when Wall Street's greedy and risky behavior triggered a global financial crisis in 2008. They were angrier still when the government had to borrow and spend hundreds of billions of dollars to rescue mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the largest banks, and the insurance company AIG. They were outraged when they found that executives of those enterprises were continuing to receive big salaries and bonuses. So just imagine how outrageous it would be if some Wall Street Sharpies went to court to argue that they didn't benefit enough from the bailouts and the taxpayers should pay them tens of billions of dollars more. Does that sound crazy, ladies and gentlemen? Well, in our modern world, I don't know that anything's crazy anymore, you know? And this is what's actually happening. Comedian John Stewart dubbed it Lawsuits of the Rich and Shameless. Wall Street figures are suing their, say their property was seized without compensation in violation of the Constitution. One case was brought by Maurice Hank Greenberg, the legendary chief executive of AIG, who built it into the world's largest insurer. Filing the other case is a group of hedge funds that bought Fannie Mae and Freddie stock for pennies per share after the companies were put in government conservatorship. Well, they're both suing, and they for the first time, Hank, what was it? Did you say
Greenberg?
Yeah. His case was initially dismissed. But now they've moved on to the U.S. Court of Claims, which appears to be sympathetic to his complaint. Mr. Greenberg is asking the court to award him and other AIG shareholders at least $23 billion from the Treasury. He says that's to compensate them for the 80% of AIG stock that the Federal Reserve demanded as a condition for its bailout. Now, they're going broke. AIG was going broke, and the government said, all right, we'll bail you out, but you got to give us 80% of your stock. Well, they bailed them out, and they saved them, and now AIG stockholders and whatever are saying, well, we need to be compensated because we're forced to give up 80% of what we had, even though what they had would have been worthless in a short period of time if they'd gone bankrupt or virtually worthless. Judge Thomas Wheeler has repeatedly signaled his agreement with Greenberg. A decision is expected any day. The Fannie and Freddie cases, the decision is further off. Trial is set to begin in the fall, yada, yada. What rings my bell about this is that are these plaintiffs victims or ingrates? Right? Have they really been victimized by the government as part of the bailout process? I don't know. You know, are they victims? Are they overwhelmed by their own ingratitude? I can't answer that question. But even though they receive billions of dollars from the government, they're arguing that they should be entitled to more. But imagine the implications if they win. We can look at it and say, oh, that's crazy, that's wild, that's bizarre. But what if this principle is established? The court says, yes, yes, yes. Those of you who are beneficiaries of the government, if you don't get enough, well, then we'll give you more. You can sue for more. Imagine, what about the poor folks on welfare? Will they be able to sue the government claiming that despite having received thousands of dollars from government, they should be entitled to more? How about the rich folks receiving government subsidies? Can they now sue the government claiming that despite having received hundreds of thousands of dollars from government, they should be entitled to more? What about government workers who are retired? Will they be able to sue the government for even larger pensions? What about ordinary retirees? How could they now sue to gain more Social Security payments? I mean, we'll watch to see how these cases are resolved, and we'll report on whatever the opinions are that are finally issued by the courts. But if you think these cases are crazy, that somebody who received billions of dollars is complaining that he didn't receive enough billions, I mean, this is like winning the lottery. Yay, I won the lottery. How much did you win? $50 million, but it's not enough. I'm going to need at least $100 million, and I'll sue for it. The world is going mad, Melody. And I'm not sure that we have any courts that are going to... I think they're helping. I think they're helping the madness. They have become a source of madness. Oh, Anyway, are you planning to sue the government for any benefits, Melody?
No, I'm not. But, I mean, there's I think that story with Greenberg probably goes a little bit deeper. And, but again, you're right. It's just in the sign of a crazy world, and I guess maybe he doesn't have anything better to do.
What do you got better to do than sue for $23 billion? I don't know how busy.
I mean, if you have,
I've got time. I don't.
I mean,
have
if one court throws time. It out, I mean, if one court throws it out, you would think that, you know, the rest would too.
Ha ha ha.
Mm-hmm.
In a rational world, that might be true, but in the world where we live, that might not be true. So, what do we got, Melody?
Well,
about 3 minutes left, and what do we have?
Well, this is just a little bit different. This is we had a Triple Crown winner this weekend.
Yep.
First time in 37 years.
Yep.
That's a long time. But what's interesting, though, you kind of wonder too. I mean, there was only American Pharoah and another horse in there that actually ran in the Kentucky Derby. So you wonder if they, you know, if they had the same competition, in the other two races as they did in the Belmont. But I don't know. But
it's hard to say.
Hard to say. But
competitive horses may just have said, "Look, we can't beat this horse. There's no point to race him." You know, hard to say what's going on there exactly. But in any case, we have another Triple Crown winner for the first time in 37 years. And people will debate whether it matches up with Secretariat. I think a lot of people think Secretariat was a better horse, but ultimately a better horse. But there's debates and there's arguments. You know, it's like, who's the best boxer?
And
who's the best world champion football team? There's, you know.
And you kind of wonder, because you go back to 1978 and you look around what was happening in the economies and so forth, and you had a triple winner there, now you have a triple winner, and I know during the Depression, horse racing was you had that one horse back there. I can't remember the name of that horse, and my apologies to the listeners, but I don't know. And maybe it's timing, maybe it's just a... You know, interesting coincidence. Sure. But then, perhaps at the end of the year, it might make a little bit. Maybe it will no longer be a coincidence. But
It'll be just fun, and not only that,
we'll
by the end of the year, we may be not racing horse meat. We may be eating horse meat, Melody. So. I don't know. I got one other one here that we can talk about just briefly before. We got a minute and a half. This is from Market Watch. The next great bull market, gold, $25,000. Someone did a survey with Elliott Wave Theory, and they charted that the gold price of gold could hit $25,000 within 10 years. All right? Now, that's an increase of 2,100% over the decade. 2,100% over the decade. That's an average of 210% per year. It wouldn't start that fast, of course, but it would finish almost vertical. You know, on the charts, it would be going up much quicker. And the article, ultimately, Elliott Wave Theory or whoever was put this together. Calculated there's a 50-year bull market coming for gold. All right. Well, I don't put a lot of faith in charts, because the numbers we're looking right now, that we get right now, are imaginary. They're fictional. What does it prove? Nevertheless, it's interesting to see someone come out who is apparently credible, using the Elliott Wave Theory, calculating that gold's going to go to 25 grand an ounce within the next 10 years. Yeah. Can't tell you that's the truth, but it's certainly something to think about if you want to make your, if you want to invest in something other than paper. We're out of time, folks. We want to thank all of you for listening to the program. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, with good Lord, bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still there. there never seems to be a single penny left for me.